Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events, and you're listening in to DRN1. Bounce Back's a fun talkback show where I get to speak to some fabulous, comical people. Today I have Jewel the Scottish Terrier and Leonie Clark, a.k.a. Gran in the Van. Welcome, ladies.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Thanks for joining me.
That's a pleasure with nothing else to do.
On a sunny afternoon.
I like that. I'm a fill-in time. Thank you.
Time filler. No, I'm just saying I had nothing scheduled in from 2 to 3 on a Saturday. The rest of my dance card is fully booked.
Phew.
Lucky, yeah.
Oh, it's actually a beautiful day here today. And Leonie's travelled in by bus and train and everything else. And
Got lost,
yeah. We got to see Bayswater train station get all changed, and I'm bitterly disappointed that, you know, potentially the, you know, underground bridge is going to disappear and trucks won't get stuck under it anymore.
I know. What's going to happen?
I don't know.
What will we do? What will Mr. Bell do?
Sure, the trucks will find somewhere else. They'll probably get stuck at the airport like I did the other day and then end up on the runway.
You want to have a lead foot for that one, hey?
Mm. Yeah, I was hoping it was getting wintry. I bought new boots, so I'm wanting it to be winter.
Oh,
it's boiling.
So you, can wear your new boots.
You know you're going to cause a heat wave when you buy new boots, don't you?
Oh, yeah. What sort of boots are they?
Nice ones. Well, actually, no, I love them, but my daughter, I put them on. She went, they look like wellies, Mum.
Oh.
They look like hiking boots or wellies. I was like, not really quite the look I was going for. But I thought edgy and urban. She was like, no. You know, the wellies. I was like, they're expensive wellies.
Are they like ankle high or sort of thigh high?
Thigh high wellies. That's weird. I'm not fishing. No, I'm not a fly fisherman. No, they're like ankle high. So, like, I suppose they're like a Chelsea boot, but with a sort of grippy sole. But they do, like, do you know what kids are like? They'll tell it too real. And then you've got that image in your head.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking of them as wellies. It's put me off them.
I got some really cool wellies a few years back because one of my kids went to a school and there was just mud everywhere, and it was a private school and everyone used to wear nice shoes, and I was like, stuff this, I am not wrecking my shoes anymore. So I rocked up in wellies and I rocked those wellies and people started following suit.
Started a trend.
I did. I thought, I don't care.
Wellies are big in the UK.
They are, aren't they? Yeah, these look like UK wellies. Yeah. That's why I think they're pretty cool.
Never owned a pair of wellies. Oh, probably little yellow ones with the yellow raincoat and that when I was a kid.
They're a bit cute.
Junior size. But they still fit.
I still wear junior size, yeah.
What size foot are you then?
8.
Yeah, I'm 7 and a half.
I jumped 4 sizes when I was pregnant. I was a size 4.
Yeah.
And by the time I had the baby, I'd gone up to a size 8 shirt. Wow. It was weird, eh?
I think my grandma's like 5.
My stomach didn't grow, my feet did.
Yeah, but your feet go wide like hobbits, don't they? It's
They do. They get hair on the toes.
Oh, no. That's disgusting. I don't even understand hairy toes. What's that about? Sometimes tell me they'd hairy nipples.
Ugh.
I said, do you have hairy nipples? I went, I don't think so. I've never looked. And then I went and I got like a magnifying glass. And my daughter came in as I'm in the middle of doing it. She says, what are you doing? I said, I thought I'd been bitten by something. I'm always making lies to deflect things from my children.
Sorry, I'm just paranoid. I got some hair.
But I didn't have hairy, FYI. I think that's a dark-haired thing.
Yeah.
I think if you've got dark hair, you might be.
Yeah, like the Greeks and the Italians with the moustaches and that.
Yeah, yeah. I've got Italian in me, so I get some hair in some odd places. Yeah.
Well, you better check tonight.
Yeah, I better. I'll be using tweezers, okay?
Oh, jeez. That'd be sore, wouldn't it? Ooh, that'd be like pulling out a nose hair times 40. Do you know when you pull out, have you ever pulled out like a lip hair? Oh, that'll wake you up.
Yeah.
That's hideous.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you both, I've had you on before, Jill, yeah. My very first podcast. Some time ago, straight after COVID last year. Yeah. And Leonie, it's your first time on, so thank you.
It is.
What made you start doing comedy?
It's always been on my bucket list. And yeah, I had brain surgery and they couldn't tell me how long I had to live, so I thought, just go for it. And they just happened to have a comedy workshop at the hall that I used to live next door to.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, do you remember who ran that?
Pardon?
Do you remember who ran the comedy workshop?
Yeah, it was Julian Canny from Euphorium Creative up in Geraldton.
Oh, awesome.
Mark Canny.
Yeah.
Down here a lot, and his son, I can't remember what his name is.
Jackson.
Yeah. And they ran it up there, and it was like a workshop, and Tor helped them out as well.
Yeah.
Because they were regional, and I was in Mandurah at the time. So they did this workshop, and they taught us how to write jokes and all that till we got up to go on stage. They had a show on, and it was like, you know, me and another lady, was the first time ever on stage. I was so scared. We were both outside saying, let's run to the bottle shop, you know. And I loved it. So.
Oh, it's really good. One of the things that I seen you really, really smash at was improv. How did you get to, and I seen that in the UFC competition, how did you get good at that?
I just always been a smart ass at school. I just, because I'm only ever, small.
Yeah.
You know, as my daughter keeps reminding me, I'm down to 4'10" now. I'm old and I keep bending over and losing weight. So she's like, you realise 4'9"'s midget status. So like she's waiting for me to drop another thing. But, yeah, because I couldn't fight with my, fist because I was only a little kid. I used to always fight with my mouth.
And that's smart.
So, but I've always been, my mum had a fantastic sense of humour and so did my auntie. So always everybody's like, you're so, you should be on stage and that. So.
And here you are. Yeah. So how did you guys go? You both did some fringe shows together and
we did.
I think separately as well, is that correct?
Yeah, we did a fringe show together last year and then we did a fringe show together again this year and I did another couple of fringe shows. I did 3 fringe shows this year and the one I did with Leonie, we did with Phil Cook and John Pinnow and it was called Old Tarts and Farts.
We did Old Stock last year. I didn't even realise they both started with
That's
old.
True.
And I did Gran and a Van 2 years before that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I got really, it was just getting lonely being on stage by myself. So I advertised for another mature age comedian and, Jill was the only one besides Lurleen that replied.
So,
and we hadn't even met for months. We met at the op shop one day looking for outfits.
Really? So you both
we just clicked. Like, she's just the Scottish version of me.
Yeah.
We could just say anything to each other, and it's like we've known each other for years, eh?
That's so weird.
I honestly think one of the best things about Fringe, apart from getting to do tons of comedy, which is fantastic, has been forging really
good friendships
with not millions of people but a few people absolutely with Leonie, we never really had any disagreements and if we did we thrashed them out but I know some people don't manage to keep friendships together during Fringe and it can drive you back, you can have artistic differences and but for us we never had that. We always had the same vision and it was great.
Yeah. She just took over, she just bossed me. Last year's show was how it started, the idea I had from the show to the show at the end was nothing to do with the other one, but it worked.
And it was a real challenge for both of us.
Yeah, because it was more acting, getting changed on stage. And
that seems like a long time ago.
It does, doesn't
it's only
it?
A funny, year, yeah. And it feels like about 20 years ago.
It's great how shows can evolve, but you have to be adaptable, don't you? And
yeah,
you have to be open to that change.
But I think I enjoy the stand-up more than the character. Yeah. I'm just...
I think stand-up's natural and easy for you if you do stand-up. It's not a stretch because if you're used to being on stage and doing stand-up, that's kind of just what, you can just knock that out if you get to a certain point where you don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But I don't have any self-confidence in myself, but I still get so nervous before I go on and I still beat myself up after I come off. And I find I get up on stage and they're like, you got 5 minutes on stage. And it's like, I talk that fast because I'm so scared that nobody's going to laugh. They're like, do me 5 minutes in 3 and get off the stage.
Wow, Leonie. Mm. And you are incredible. So, you're very funny.
But I've heard the joke in your head 100 times. So you think they've heard it too, you know, and it's, you've got to think, oh, you know, they haven't heard it before.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've heard it the same thing and you do it in exactly the same voice and, you know, the dips and, you know, things in your voice and that.
So. I think you get into a really good space the moment you can step on stage and you take on that persona, whatever that persona is.
Yeah.
And then it's not about you and any ego stuff or any self-conscious stuff you need to leave behind. And that's
definitely don't have any ego, but self-conscious. But once you get the first couple of laughs, you know, and you get somebody smiling. When we had one this year, I think it was our first or second show we did at Fringe, and there was a lady just sitting there. Oh. And I think they had to have masks on at the time, so you couldn't see if they were smiling or not. And she just sat there with her arms folded, and it just put you off.
Oh, wow.
It just made you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think, though, one thing that doing so much Fringe this year sort of kind of changed in my mind was to stop fixating on what's in front of you and just do the performance irrespective. And I think actually by the end of this Fringe, I got a lot better at that I felt now that I can, it doesn't matter what's in front of you. Because I emceed a gig during Fringe for a UK promoter and there was six people at the gig and it was a two-hour comedy it was the longest thing in the world to MC for six people. And at the end of it, we all got to be had such good time during it. They were saying, do you want to go to a karaoke bar and we'll get shots? I was like that. Yeah, no, I'm going home on my bed.
But did the six people stay for the whole 2 hours?
They managed to stay for the whole 2 hours because there was a break. Wow. And I said to them, let's not, I said, don't go away at the break or it'll be terrible. And they all came back and they were, and it was lovely. And I think what that taught me is it doesn't matter what's in front of you, don't look at it, because you can get in your head, as Leonie said, like you can fixate on somebody that is maybe didn't like you. And I used to do that. I remember at that UFC thing, there was a young couple at the front and I saw him mouth to her, oh, what's this we've got?
Wow.
You know, when you can see what people are saying. And that was it. And I just, it shook me and I didn't respond. I went in a sort of fight or flight mode. And when you do that, you're rubbish. You need to be comfortable whatever is in front of you. That's what I think. So that's my epiphany from Fringe this year, is just enjoy whatever's in front of you. 2, 10, 500, doesn't matter if they like you or they hate you. You go in with the same attitude, you know, and then you've a better chance, I think, of winning them over.
Yeah. It's interesting you both said about people that have had relationships through their Fringe journey and they've put through shows and it just hasn't worked out for them, and that's okay. I think that is also a growth cycle for people. And sometimes you work out you've got major differences with each other and that's okay to end
As long as you get through the show.
Yeah, or not continue with the show. I've seen that a few times happen as well. So
imagine if it start one people, you know, registered for Fringe and then their show fell apart before they even got there, you know.
Yeah, and it does happen, doesn't it? So, but I was going to ask you ladies about conflict resolution, and have you had a situation where you haven't resolved something successfully? I thought I'd share with you a story from myself. Probably one of the most funniest times where I've had some conflict was with my sister, and I had my 13th birthday party, so I haven't, you know, developed very well at 13. I was still a kid, and, you know, she decided to embarrass me by getting on my underwear and hanging it onto my fan, the fan in the family room with all my friends there who I was trying to impress, and she turned it on.
That's funny.
And my conflict resolution in that was I ran to her drawer, got her whole underwear drawer and threw it over the neighbour's fence. I love my sister. Sorry, Christine. But I didn't deal with that very well, you know, and obviously I was only 13, but I still see that sometimes people don't deal with conflict very well. So what about you guys? Have you had a situation where you haven't dealt with conflict well? And
most of my life, I reckon. I'd say for the last 54 years of my life. I don't know. I don't think I have ever really dealt with conflict. I think I'm a bit of a coward, and it probably comes from childhood inability to resolve conflict, because I think whatever you do as a child probably sets you up for life at how you deal with those things. And I think we had quite a conflicted household. We had a shy sister, we had an older sister, and we had me at
the mouthy sister.
Well, you know, it's funny because my mum said to me, "You were always an extrovert, and you never were self conscious." And I thought about that, and I said, "Mum, that actually isn't the case. I think I became mouthy and over the top because everything was always focused on the elder sister, who my mum and dad fought with all the time, and the middle sister, who was painfully shy and just very socially very withdrawn, and everything revolved around them. The only way probably you could get any
attention
was to be like a puppet and a clown, you know, constantly putting on wee performances to try and sort of gather some sort. So I think I grew up in a household where conflict never was well received or dealt with, you know, like I never got a good sense of that from my parents, and I think that's probably made me always avoid conflict, you know, or react overly badly. Do you know what I mean? I mean, so I don't think I do well trying to sort my kids out. I managed to be a mum and sort their conflicts out way better because my kids got on great, but I was absolutely damned that my kids would get on like how I got on with my sisters, which was appalling, you know.
Yeah.
And it never changed, and it was never resolved, and to this day I'm estranged with both my sisters, you know.
Oh wow, are they still overseas, Jill, as well?
Yeah, they're in the UK, so yeah. It's easier to be estranged when you're on the other side.
I'm the same with my sister. Oh, I had a family reunion last week.
Yeah.
And in a park in Yokon, and my sister sat over one side and I sat over the other. My brother went and said hello, but it's like, no, not speaking to her, and we just pretended the other one didn't exist.
Yeah. What caused the conflict between you both?
I can't really say.
That's okay.
But it was her fault. And my children are both, my two kids, they're 33 and 37.
Mm.
Well, next month they are, and they don't have anything to do with each other either.
Weird.
Oh, wow.
So which, it can be a which family.
But I find that hard.
Yeah.
You know, because my son's always saying, oh, why don't you, talk to Auntie Karen and all that? And it's like, well, you don't talk to your sister. He's like, oh, but it's not the same. But, you know.
How long ago did you and your sister have a conflict that stopped you from talking?
Well, we've always been at each other's throats, but I think it's been 2 years since we've spoken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least you remember what the conflict was. I do know of a situation where, and it was quite sad, but in this situation, they couldn't even verbalise why they were in conflict, and then one of them passed away.
And then it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. Yeah.
I think, though, it is, I do think you are hugely influenced by how your family's do or don't resolve conflicts. I mean, my family were very dysfunctional, but my parents on one side were a loving, happy family where everyone got on. That's my mum's side. On my dad's side, bizarrely, my grandpa and gran lived estranged together for near on 70 years, and they never spoke to each other. And they lived on either side of the house because gran and grandpa got married in the war, and granny got pregnant by an American airman, and grandpa married her. She was a real beauty, and he married her because he managed to grade up to a good looking woman, and she graded down because she was pregnant and desperate. So she married grandpa, and then he was a communist, got sent to the Second World War as a conscientious objector, as an ambulance driver, got shot at, came out from the war, and he'd been away fighting longer than they'd been married, pretty much. And she had two kids to my grandpa and one kid to the airman. Wow. And when he came back from war, he was a broken man. Mm. And they never managed to fix that conflict that had happened, and they just lived with that. And so I think I grew up with the assumption that it was actually okay to hate each other and live in the same house, and you'd carry on regardless. That seems insane.
Oh, yeah.
You know, honestly, that was like, I don't know. That didn't seem mental to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's yeah. like Gran That's and what Gran. You would always known, but I suppose.
So, I mean, how do you become good at conflict resolution when that's...
It's not modeled to you.
It's not yeah. in your wheelhouse, yeah. do you know no. what I mean?
Yeah. Which part of Scotland did your family come from?
Oh, well, West Coast really, sort of. My grandparents are from the Clyde side in near Glasgow, but it's strange though when you think of that, like to live together. I mean, I remember going to Granny's house and she'd say, "Ask your grandpa if he's coming in for his dinner." And he wouldn't even really speak or look at you. Strange. Like, just...
Oh, it's
just
still like meals together.
No, they did. But that's the nuts thing. But I never saw Gran and Grandpa speak to each other. But when he died, when Grandpa died, because that was just before I emigrated, I remember my Gran manically going round speaking to everyone at the funeral. And you could tell she was upset, right?
Yeah.
And she hated him, but there always was something there. And she was super manic and she went round and told everyone that Grandpa, your grandpa's been having an affair with a woman from the bowling club for the last 20 years and she wears a wig. And she went round and told everyone at the funeral and nobody knew where to look. But you could see that this manic, like, expression of this horror, you know, and like she was sad. But it was very, very, so I don't know, your family's.
I wondered where that coming from. That's our true, show yeah, last year. Yeah, our friend show last year about...
I wrote that in.
Oh, yeah. Did you? You added
having an affair with somebody that wears a wig. And it's like, hang on, that's our show last year. Yeah.
Wow. Because my great-grandfather was also in... He's Scottish. I'm from Edinburgh. And he ran away from his family at 14 yeah. to join World War One and was on the French front line and was also in World War Two. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I didn't find that out until my grandfather passed away a couple of years ago and my grandmother actually told the story. So I thought, gosh, thank goodness he lived. Otherwise, our whole bloodline would have been gone.
Yeah, well, we had an uncle, Uncle George, who was the son of the airman. Nobody knew who the airman was. The only person that knew was Gran and she went to the grave with that, you know. But Uncle George got murdered in Italy when he was a merchant sailor. But there'd be a family somewhere who we are sort of tenuously not related to, but that you know what I mean? And I just think that's super interesting. But, like, if somebody's gone to the grave with it and told nobody, there's no way to know that. You know?
Yeah, what do you do? Yeah, there's not much you
can
do.
It's amazing, though, when you think of it. Like, how sad to be...
There's a whole other line that you don't know about.
To live your life, like... the loss of that one person.
So your bloodline, was it the grandfather or the airman?
No, I'm grandpa. I wasn't the airman. No, Uncle George was my dad's brother who died.
Yeah.
And he was the airman. And he was Granny's favourite because...
That was her love.
That was the love of her life. Yeah. Super sad, eh?
Oh, that is sad.
But Granny was a real horror. She was like the harshest person I know. She was super harsh. And
she just had unrequited love.
She did, but like, I remember telling my dad that, because my Auntie Margaret died, so she had three kids. One was the airman, two were to my grandpa, which was my dad, my auntie, and my auntie died of breast cancer. So the only one that was left was my dad. And on her deathbed, she was like dying in hospital. And, my mum and dad were there looking after her because there's no one else. And she said to my dad, "I wish you'd died. Why are you the only one that lived?"
And that's enough.
But you're talking about conflict.
Yeah.
You know, like on your dying bed to say that to your child.
Yeah.
I just think, and then.
Wow.
I know. And
cutting, is it?
Really? Like, and she kind of meant it, but. Like, in some ways, my dad didn't seem to be as offended as perhaps he would, but I think he'd been pretty horrible to her a long time.
Mm.
But that's like, you know, we all grow up with this wish that it's going to be like Hollywood films. You know, at the end, we're all going to have this beautiful, you know, touching moment with our parents.
Happily
and they're
after.
Going to tell you, you know, what a fabulous child you were and, you know, how, you know, and you weren't a disappointment. And the reality is most people go to the grave and nothing's said, you know, like the secrets aren't spilled,
yeah.
the truths aren't told. It's just death.
Mm. Yep.
So that's a bit sad.
What about Leonie? What about your family? Are they originally from Australia, or have you got overseas family?
Mostly, my mum's family's Dutch, and I don't really know. I've just been tracing actually the family tree back with my dad's side.
Yeah,
my dad died in an accident when I was only like 1 year old. So, and all my grandparents died before I was born. So,
yeah,
you know, but I've been tracing the family tree back. You know, to find that we, you know, come out from Kent in England. You know. Somebody stole a horse and got sentenced to the Swan Colony, and yeah, they were like the first white settlers of Gemelling and all that. So,
oh,
yeah,
there's
a book written about them and all that. So we're going to go up to Gemelling because the old homestead, the original homestead, is now the Gemelling Museum and all that. You know, so
yeah,
quite interesting. But
yeah, it will be interesting to retrace as well.
But yeah, I grew up with a stepfather. You know, my mum remarried when I was five.
Yeah.
And that, so I had a bigger family because of his side, really.
Yeah.
And that, but yeah.
What about ladies to do with conflict? Have you experienced any in comedy, and have you dealt with it in that situation? And if you're happy to share the story, go for it.
In comedy, no, I haven't dealt with any conflict.
Yeah.
You know,
I think everybody in comedy hates each other, so it's all right.
Yeah,
well, that's a universal agreement. They all hate each other.
I mean, there's a few that, you know, I just rub me up the wrong way, but
it's a lot.
Apart from
eagles.
A couple of the males that, you know, they don't like women in comedy, and they make you know about it. But the couple I've had that have insulted me, you know, straight to my face, have been the very older male ones. You know, not as much the younger ones.
Yeah.
But like the older one, like those are, I don't even know what their names are. They go to the Bass and Dean show all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But an older two men.
Yeah.
Nick and something. But yeah, they were, you know.
Yeah.
And they were sitting in the audience when I first did the show, you know, giving me filthy looks, one of them. But it's like, you know.
Oh, how did you deal with that then? Like, you just give him a filthy back, or?
I asked the other one, you know, and I said, oh, they just don't believe, you know, women should be in comedy, they should be in the kitchen and all that. And
wow.
That's their problem, not mine.
You know? Yeah, that's a reflection of them, not you, definitely.
I thought, how old-fashioned, you know.
I think you can waste a lot of energy.
Yeah, they're not worth it.
Trying to smooth things out with people that are not really worth your effort. I mean, I accept that I'm not everybody's cup of tea, but I just think I'm too old now. I'm 55 this year, and I think, you know what, I'm a formed human being. I'm not saying I can't learn or I can't evolve, but pretty much this is it. Love it or leave it. You know, like, I just think you are what you are. Some people you get on with, some people you don't. Not everybody's going to love you. I tell that to my kids. Not everybody wants to be your friend. Not everybody's going to like you.
Yeah,
and you just have to give up the notion that you can be chummy with everyone and everyone's going to
think
you're
brilliant.
Funny. You know,
I think
I'm always telling my husband how funny Jill is. He'd never even really met Jill, my husband, and he finally saw her.
Oh,
well, he thinks she's the most hilarious person on the planet, you know.
Not
me, but it's like, oh, God, she is so funny. And it's like, it's not really her humour, I said, it's the accent that gets
her. Oh, it's just
her,
the accent, honestly.
But, you know
what, I've been doing some stuff online.
Remember that lady at that show that came up and asked you if you did any other accents?
It's true. She says, do you do any other accents? Oh, your accent's great. Do you do any
others? That was at one of Avon's shows, actually. Remember that Fringe preview show last year?
At Bassendean.
Yeah.
She goes, I loved your accent.
Oh, Guilford,
you
was, yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
So it's true. She just assumed that you put it on then?
Yeah, but nobody can do a good Scottish accent because it's like it's
as we were lined up seeing everybody out the door, they said it to her. It was so funny.
Oh, that's so funny.
I know. If I could, I'd love to be able to do other accents, you know. Like, that would be, I think that's such a skill. People can do voices. I think that's fab.
I
would love to teach.
I've always wanted to be a ventriloquist, but
so
I'm like her. Can't keep our mouths closed long enough. You've got to make mouth shut by that.
I think it would be a good challenge to, like, force yourself to, like, have one thing moving in you. There's an amazing ventriloquist, one of my favourite female comedians, a lady called Nina Conti, who is the best ventriloquist I've ever seen and one of the funniest, wonderful. Her act with this wee monkey is the most gorgeous thing to watch. I mean, she's so clever. She's so good as a ventriloquist. She's so sharp. The monkey's amazing. And you absolutely 100% believe the monkey is a sentient being. It's insane. And she's done these really lovely YouTube videos where she's in her bed saying goodnight to the monkey and they're having their wee conversation. And she does this one where her cat comes and attacks the monkey. And the cat's, and the monkey's going, Nina, it's attacking me. It's really sore. She's like, and she's going, oh, well. And she's going, no, its claws are in my lips. And it was, it's just, it's a lot. If you've not checked out Nina Conti, that is, as a ventriloquist, what one should aspire to.
Oh, do you guys have pets?
A cat, a dog and four chickens.
No.
I've got a
husband. A husband.
I've got a cat and my cat does some really weird things. Like he has this fetish with plastic bags and I don't really get it. But if I bring a plastic bag, he licks it. Like, and I'm like, ugh, what is that all about? But he really gets into plastic bags and thongs.
Well, my husband's scared of bubble wrap. My husband's petrified of bubble wrap.
That's brilliant.
Every time
she wraps herself in it at night.
It really is. You can do that.
She's made pyjamas out of bubble wrap.
Freaks out. Don't be silly. I gave him his own bedroom as a present years ago. Not sleeping in my room. That invitation only.
Oh, hey, while we're still on conflict, Jill, you had a situation come up and are you happy to share what happened? And
well, again, it's one of those bizarre things I talked about earlier. Yeah, it's Tuesday night, I'm watching the telly with my husband. I'm on one end, he's down another, 27 scatter cushions between us. And I got a wee message, bing. And like, there's the rule of the living room, which is phone messaging must be switched off. And I did this loud ping and I looked at it. And there's this DM and I thought, oh, I don't recognise that name. And I looked at it and it was from a girl who bullied me at school 40 years ago. Now, actually, probably more than 40 years ago, near 45 years ago. That's insane that after all this time, out the blue, you would get a DM from your school bully. And basically, this message was her owning to the fact that she had been a bitch to me and how she'd felt bad about it and thought that she'd given me the apology she should have given me 45 years ago. Now, I was bullied from the middle of primary school to about fourth year in high school. So we're talking about a period of about 8 years. And
probably the same person.
It was a group of them. And so they had plenty of opportunity to say sorry or stop. Mm. But for this period of time, they were relentless in how they did it. And they would wait for me after school, hide behind walls. And I had to walk past where they lived to get to the village I lived in. So there was no escape. There's no other way to get to the village. And it wasn't just like the verbal stuff. I mean, they gave me a proper pasting. They'd pull my hair out, beat me up.
No.
And it was in those days where your parents were just like, ignored it. You know, there was no, let's go up to the school and we'll speak to them. It was just like, just go on with it. You know, that the conflict resolution from your parents, ignore it, and it'll go away.
My parents were good with that.
Just like granddad and grandma.
There you go. Like, what generation? So as a child, I hated school. I was bright, so I managed to get passed by natural brilliance. but that was one of the reasons they hated me, because like they perceived me as being brighter than them, which evidently I was, and they would chase me down every day after school. I would avoid going home. I'd hide in the library. I read a lot because I was always in the library, avoiding walking home, and then I'd wait an hour and walk home. And they'd still be there. You know, like it was relentless. So anyway, 45 years later, this woman sends me this DM looking for absolution, looking for me to tell her
But I did forgive her, and yeah, you know, kids will be kids. But I have found it,
Jill, this person coming back to you this far in the, you know, long, did it make you connect to that place where you felt vulnerable?
Yeah, instantly back to being that kid again. You know what? I recently realised that, like, because of this, I have a pathological dislike of people touching my hair, and it's from getting your hair pulled out, you know, like, I never got past that, and I never made that association, and it kind of made me sad in a lot of ways, and it took me back to being that victim and being that terrified child who didn't ever know how to solve that conflict, because what do you do? I mean,
You're powerless. It's yeah.
You are powerless. Yeah, and I suppose the persona that I am on stage, and because I go by Jill the Scottish Terrier, is because I'm not that person anymore. You know, like, I am that person, but I've evolved. And, you know, they say that, you know, we turn our adversity into, you know, it helps, you know, creative process. A lot of people who are comedians were bullied, and I get that, and you know, it's great we've turned it into something, you know, productive. But you know, I'd like to have done comedy just as a joyous thing and not as some antithesis of some horrors back in your life, but it never leaves you, and I've never forgiven them, and I never could, because if it was one off occasion, maybe I could forgive that, but I don't have that much forgiveness in my heart, because I think it shaped me far too deeply, and I just don't think you get to drop into somebody's life after 45 years with some facile remark, you know, like, it's so glib to send one paragraph and think in some way that compensates for what you did.
8 years of trauma.
Did you send a reply back?
I didn't. What I actually did was I wrote a comedy set around it, and I went out. This was two nights after it happened, and I wrote a comedy set saying, you know, there's good things about being bullied, you know, makes you a better runner. You know, like, it was great when I took up boxing, because I was used to getting hit in the face. So I did this black comedy thing that kind of was funny but was a bit horrific as well. And then I read her message out to this audience, and I said, I was faced with three solutions to it. One, my husband's option, which was ignore it, which obviously I'm not going to do. Two is offer her the forgiveness that she obviously so desperately wants.
I would have been totally disappointed if you took that option.
Or option three, write a comedy set about it, perform it in front of people, record it and DM it to her. And I did record it. I didn't DM it to her, but actually by saying the words and getting it out, I actually don't feel like such a beaten child anymore, you know, and I know I'm 55 and that stuff should be so far behind you, but deep down, we're all still children, you know, and I think it never leaves you. So it was, do you know what, it was so, it's kind of rocks you to the pit of your soul, you know, that you just think, going back to that after all this time. I'm not saying you put it behind you, because you don't really, but I think you put it in a bit of your brain that is,
you take out every now and then.
It is a wound, and it's got a scar on it, and that scar's always going to be there.
But I wonder what made her remember it all this.
Yeah. I suggested to Jill at the time AA, because one of the AA strategies is that you seek previous people out and you ask for forgiveness. Mm. And it is, I don't know what this lady's journey is, but it can be drug or alcohol related. And if she's in a healing time, that may be probable.
That's a shame. Beating me up for all those years has ruined her liver. Well, yeah, whatever, you know.
Like, karma, bitch, karma,
You know what? Yeah, I'm sure she's got her, you know. But I just think, I look back at my life and I thought, have I ever been that terrible? If I was on my deathbed, would I be looking back and saying, oh, you know, I wish I'd made... I've never shafted anyone. I've never done that. I mean, I've maybe fallen out with people, but not over anything,
you know.
It's crazy, but it's such a bolt from the blue, you know, to get something like that after all that.
And it would jolt you. It would jolt you, and you're not prepped for it. So that's where it's unfair, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get in conflict resolution. for me, all I could think of is if I respond anything to her, it opens up the stream of dialogue, which I don't want to open because there's nothing to be said. She said that she's sorry. Great, I hear it. I don't care. It makes no difference to what happened because it's too little, too late.
Yeah.
You know, you can't fix the wounds of something that goes so deep by something as glib as, you know, a two-line apology.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to be gained for me. And I just think I've actually owned it and I've flipped the script by talking about it and being open about it when it is painful to me. And I do feel embarrassed and self-conscious about it even, but I've not shied away from it. I've talked publicly about it a couple of times, which is good, and thanks for bringing it up. But it helps you get some sort of grip on it, I suppose.
Yeah,
and not
definitely.
Be the petrified child hiding in the library.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think we've all got some childhood stuff that we've got to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And every now and then it just creeps up and you kind of go, ooh.
And when you've your own kids, though, you look at bullying in a different way as well, don't you?
Mm. Oh,
you just think, imagine somebody doing that to my child.
My child, yeah.
You know, oh, my goodness, you know, I can't. How my parents ignored it, I just think.
Sometimes I think they thought ignoring it would make it go away.
Like our family.
But it didn't.
The lack of conflict resolution.
Yeah. You're both married. Yeah. How long have you both been married for?
16 years.
14 years.
Wow. Okay. So how do you resolve conflict in your marriages?
Different rooms, mate.
Different rooms, mate.
Clean up. Facebook.
Well, don't really, but, you know, we've been getting on, lately we've been getting on really well.
Yeah.
Define lately.
You know, the last couple of weeks.
My
husband's very quiet.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, but when he stuffs up, it's like, you're going to put that in your set, aren't you? The first thing that comes up.
And you do.
And I do.
Of course.
How are they both supportive of you guys doing comedy?
Yeah, he's totally supportive.
Darren tolerates it, I think.
He's got his football. He's always at football and I used to love football. We actually had our first date, that's where I met him, at a football match. But he's so full on football that I can't stand it anymore.
Yeah. Oh.
So he's actually at football at the moment. You know?
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't know. I mean, marriage is a balance that, pardon me, it's like a tightrope, isn't it?
Mm.
Can stay on that rope, if you can stay on the rope and just look at the thing at the other end, I don't know what the thing at the other
end
is.
That's what we said, you know, our next show's going to be, I could slap the smile straight off his face.
I don't know, it's hard, you know what, I don't imagine I'm easy to live with in any shape or form. And I do think every marriage is a precarious balance and we always look at better examples of marriage and think, why is our marriage not like
that? My husband's very, very quiet, so he doesn't talk. He can say good morning and then the next thing he'll say is good night and he can sit there all day next to me and not speak.
Wow.
And me, I'm a talker, you know, and he's like legally blind now and he's pretty well deaf too. So, you know, if he annoys me in the daytime, then it's like he just doesn't get dinner. I just don't feed him. It's like, nah. And I told him the other day, it's like, nah, you're going to be, you know, an asshole to me. I'm not feeding you, you know.
Yeah.
Because he only been talking to me, you know, when he needs a lift to the station. So, you know. I said, no, I'm not giving you a lift now. So he had to go and catch a bus at 6:30 the other morning to the appointment because I refused to give him a lift to the train. So he's learning now. We're going out for a nice day out tomorrow.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds lovely.
Freehand markets.
Oh, beautiful. Freehand is great as well. So do you guys do dates in your marriages still?
No.
That sounds like a date that you're about to do.
We did. We've started bought tickets to Jill and John's show.
It was good.
Went out.
That was a date.
And he really enjoyed himself. Yeah, it was. Yeah. You know,
that's great.
Let's start going out, you know. Yeah. He can't sit home because he's happy to sit home watch the bloomin' TV all day, you
know.
I've still
got younger kids, so a lot of our life is just child management and household management of fitting in what I have my interests, my husband has his interests, the children have their interests.
Oh, yeah.
They have work. We have work, they have school, I have a business. So basically most of our life is this strange jigsaw of trying to fit all the pieces in. And at the moment where we're at in our life, there really isn't much extra time for what you would call a date night. And, you know, it seems quite nice in reality, but, you know, I'm out doing comedy a couple of nights a week. He's out doing mountain bikes. He does trail riding. The kids have got activities. We do scouts. Weekends are usually scouts. So really, there's so little time at the end of it. I do feel that you're just in a sort of holding pattern of facilitating everything that has to happen within the family unit. So ideally it would be lovely to have romantic whatevers, but I just think it just becomes like a practical juggle and there isn't much energy for much else really.
And I'm totally opposite. We spend all our time together.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, now I've got a car, it's like, you know, I'll go to the doctors and I'll come home, you know. I mean, I used to go out and if he annoyed me, I'd go home 4 days later.
That's like a mini break.
I was away for a week once and he didn't even ring to say, where are you?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, you know.
He didn't report you as missing.
No.
That's fine.
So, Jill, with your situation, does it, doing different lives, do you guys have lots to talk about then?
No, we do. Look, I don't know. I think as parents with young children, your energy kind of revolves around conversations about your kids a lot. I think your conversations tend to be a bit, you know, like we chat, but we don't, I don't think we sit down and talk as much as we should or we could. But I do think at the moment with kids in high school and everything else, it's, I don't know, COVID's been weird as well. I think you kind of run out of conversation because you have so much conversation in every other element. So when we come together, like we sit and we watch tell together, you know, like we chat when we're cooking dinner and that. But I don't think we make enough time for each other because it's just how it is at the moment. But, it, you know, he's a great husband in that he never has stifled anything of what to do. He's been supportive. He's never tried to dissuade me from bizarre and ridiculous pursuits. and he's understanding of the fact that I have a necessity to do this. But, you know, he's not, he's a bit quiet, like 4,000% quieter.
Yeah, we've both got very quiet husbands.
Yeah. What's the weirdest thing about your relationships then?
10 years age difference is probably a bit weird.
He's only 5 years older than me.
Yeah,
Max is younger. That's weird, though. Is it?
No, I think that's weird. What's weird? I don't know. He's Australian and I'm Scottish. That's weird. That's like from, honestly, it's like culturally super different.
Yeah, okay.
Like I thought Australia would be a bit like home and away when I emigrated.
Really?
And it is new. I don't know, like, a lot of your I think your upbringing and your culture and the country that you grew up in and spent most of your life in, it doesn't sort of leave you. So I think I still feel quite foreign. No?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Sure.
We don't have anything weird.
Not weird. I don't think there's anything weird. I don't think there's many surprises.
It's just very quiet. It just doesn't speak. It's not that he doesn't want to. It's like, but what are we supposed to be talking about? but then we can go to the shops and he'll have a good old conversation with this strange checkout chick or the bloke that says, oh, nice T-shirt, and he'll have a good 10-minute conversation. It's like, but that's all I want, you know?
Yeah, but I think there's a quietness that is comfort with somebody as well, though. I think the person that knows you better than others is the person that you can sit in a room without maybe chatting that you actually can sit in silence with, because most other people you don't sit in silence with.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that is
but it works,
an intimacy in its own way.
Because I'm very bossy. I mean, he knows I wear the patch in the relationship. Whatever I decide goes, because, you know, he just doesn't get a word in edgewise. You know? And I'll stew. And I mean, I could be a bitch. I mean, he's like, you know, he never raised his voice. He never swore till he met me. And I had to teach him how to swear, you know. Now it's like, did you realise you said the F word 3 times in that sentence? He's like, really, did I? And it's like, well done.
Oh, no. I think kids make you swear. Oh, that's what's made me swear more.
Well, I haven't got that excuse anymore because my kids are one in Albany and one up the other end.
Scottish people use swear words as punctuation marks. You know, like, it's just how we roll, and it's always been a part. But I don't really swear much in front of the kids, so it builds up.
I try not to.
She says she does. Yeah. But every time I accidentally swear in front of the kids, she goes, don't swear in front of my kids. And they go, Mum, come on. Know, you swear all the time.
I don't. No, I don't actually say most swear words in front of my kids at all.
Yeah.
And I never have done.
My kids pick me up on it if I do. And we had swear jars at one stage because, you know, I was like, well, let's curve this. I kept losing, but, you know.
They just words, though. Yeah. Like, I think as the kids get older.
I mean, my son doesn't, you know, swear or. I mean, neither my kids drink or smoke or. But my daughter, I mean, she's like, you know, you'd think she'd invented swearing. She's terrible.
What about in comedy? Can you guys do your sets without swearing?
Yeah, or do you have been asked to. I mean, yeah. I'll tone it down. If the audience is a bit older, I'll change me, like, I won't say the C word, but I'll change me. F's to, you know, shit or something like that. You know, it depends on the audience, you know, because you can usually read them and I'll maybe tone it down a little bit.
I like swearing.
But I just naturally swear.
Yeah.
You know? I actually like it though. Like I purposefully enjoy self-expression.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that when you need to moderate your language, that's true expression, because it's a stifled expression, you know. It's like, you know, eat what you like, but here's your plate of food.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like that, you know. I mean, I come across, everybody sees me coming up on stage and I get that, she's so little and she's so old.
And I said
to my husband, if they knew what I was really like. So I know that when I swear, I get that effect and it's part of my act, that if I say the F word, they're like gobsmacked that an old lady's swearing.
Yeah,
but it's part
shock
of me.
Value.
So. Yeah, I can use it for shock value because it works.
Yeah, I do, in my jokes. Yeah.
And it does. And it goes well for me because I'm old. You know, they don't associate older people with saying the F word or, you know, talking about.
Maybe because it's not expected as well.
Yeah, it's ironic.
I use it to that advantage.
Because, absolutely.
You know, you try to make them laugh and they do, you know.
Yeah.
And as soon as I drop the F bomb,
I use it, I suppose. My content sometimes is a bit blue and quite sweary, and I think people look at me and think, it's a nice middle-aged lady, she looks respectable and nice, and then you just hit them with it. And then once they go over the sledgehammer on the head that says this is how it's going to be, they're like, okay, that's fine. It's a more relaxed lady than perhaps.
But it does work to your advantage if you use it the right way, not to be.
I don't know. I've never tried it any other way. I mean,
no.
I've never really put the effort into writing a clean set because every time I do, I think psychologically.
But that's just naturally how I speak and think, you know.
If you guys ever venture down the road of sex, how is that with your audience as well? Say, like, you've got an older audience.
I don't have sex with my audience either. Well, not my stiff joke, because I'm old and I use that again, you know.
That's hilarious, actually.
Because my husband's just not interested, you know. That's why I've got a boyfriend. And I hope my husband never hears his podcast, you know.
Yeah, what happens if you know, does your audience expect you guys to talk about sex or?
Probably not because I'm older, and that's why I say, you know, if my husband got a stiff, I wouldn't get excited. I'd get the coroner, you know.
Well, and my opening line is usually, I'm only here to avoid having sex with my husband because there's a lot of women out there, of all ages really, understand that there's a lot of times in their life they actually just don't really feel like having sex, and it's not because they don't love their husbands, and it's not because they're not attracted to them. It's just because they can't be bothered. And so I think there's a truism there, and people respect the truth of...
I mean, we don't really talk about sex in itself, but like one of her jokes that she usually does, which is one of my favourite jokes, is like, you know, that, you know, the, you know, when they throw you up against the fridge, and then she's like, you know, you've got 100 fridge magnets stuck in your back, and do that. That's hilarious to me. I love that joke.
Yeah. I like to look at...
And it makes people think.
It does. It brings you there visually, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With
the keys, and then looking for them in the morning.
Because I do that whole thing about sex in telly is different from sex in reality, because sex on telly is different from sex in reality. And I think we're blighted by this idea that's what sex is, whereas for a lot of people that isn't what sex is, and it's okay to have any or no sex. It's like we're living in a society where there's expectations for everyone that they feel obliged to have the picture perfect relationship, the picture perfect sex life, whereas living in reality, you know that your own relationships are complicated.
You go to bed, you're knackered, you're going to sleep, you know.
And you know what? Like a husband that brings you... My husband brings me a cup of coffee every morning in bed. And I think for me, that's a lovely thing. Like to me means more to me than being flung up against the fridge and having vigorous sex. Because I just think I'd actually rather have the cup of coffee, Leonie. You're with me on that. And if there was a biscuit, it'd be even better.
I don't know. When I drink coffee all day, I haven't had a cup of this yet.
I do think there's like public ideas that we all feel that we should live up to, and I actually don't think they're reality. And that's what I like to cover in my comedy, is looking at this ridiculously overinflated idea of what sex and love and marriage is like versus actually what sex and love and marriage is like.
In reality,
the juxtaposition between the two is what I think's funny, and by pointing out those disparities,
normalising it, you know, normalising what it really is.
Making people feel it's okay that if you went to bed again avoiding sex with your husband, it isn't because that's a bad thing, it's just because you're tired and you just want to sleep and your bed's cozy.
That's life.
That's okay. That's okay, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just usually practical. It's the balance of practical life, everyday life. Our lives are too hectic. We do too much.
I had a brief stint of working in aged care, and I can tell you guys as well, even in aged care people are still having sex. So everyone of any age is still doing it, but if you don't want to do it, it's okay. If you do want to do it, it's okay.
It's like if you do, if you don't, they should be normalised as being like the expectations people have and they put on themselves and the pressures. And that's not what any relationship should be about. It should be about finding the space that is there for you. You know,
absolutely,
whatever that looks like, and it doesn't need to look like anyone else's relationship.
No,
I mean, I've been married 16 years, and some people would look at our relationship and think it looks a bit weird, but you know, we're still hanging in there, so it works. Everyone's relationship's different. Grandma, grandpa, 60 years in the same house.
Yeah.
60 years in the same house.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that. I mean,
that's incredible.
It is incredible.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like, but it's easy to look from the outside in and see that as being bizarre. But what was it like for them in the inside? What's the difference? Do you know what I mean? You only see the outside view.
Oh, yeah, we only see what we want to see.
Yeah, exactly.
And what people let you see. That's
absolutely
what you see. You don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
Ladies, where can people find you on social media?
Well, I'm Jill the Scottish Terrier with a G-G-I-L-L, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook. You can find me.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just on Facebook as myself and Granada Van.
On Instagram?
On Instagram and Facebook, yes.
Yep. Okay, and do you guys have a joke that you could share with us?
Not really, no. I can't think of one, actually.
I've got a good one-liner if you want it.
Oh, yeah, go
ahead. It's a funny one, and I've been trying to write one-liners because I do very narrative comedy, but this is my one-liner that I like. Do you think sharks like the taste of semen?
It's It's a good end with this, the topic of sex, right?
Okay, that's my one-liner. I'm trying to work on a set that involves another 50 of that quality. At the moment, I've only got one good one.
That's it, is it?
That's it.
Oh, thank you both so much for joining us today.
I'm at the Craft.
The Craft? When?
Or tonight, but is this, this isn't live. Oh, well, no. I was at the Craft.
I've been at the Calamandra this year, and that's about it.
Yeah, it was a nice gig.
That yeah, that was International Women's Day. That was awesome, actually. I really enjoyed that night. It, yeah, having everyone come together was just such a good vibe, wasn't it? Yeah. Really good.
I don't know why we had our hand up, but because that never got used, oh, did it?
No, it did. Oh, I actually put that on International Women's Day website. Oh. Yeah, so that was what that was for. That was you guys making a vow.
Than anything.
Mm.
Just look natural with your hand up. It was very strange.
Yeah, because my husband's got the shake, so I couldn't get him to take a photo because it's like... Blah, 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 blah.
Oh. Well, ladies, thank you so much.
You're
my name's
welcome.
Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events, and we've had Jewel the Scottish Terrier and Leonie Clark. Thank you, ladies. Yeah, listen in again. Find us on Bounce Back on social medias as well. And thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.